Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Maddock. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Maddock. In this episode of the show, I'm joined by my buddy Mike Gallagher to discuss the return of the NBA to all of our lives. The NBA is hoping to get their games going at the end of July and the beginning of August. There's going to be an 8-game, you know, kind of play-in series where teams play quote-unquote regular season games, and then we get to the playoffs. And Mike and I discuss, you know, kind of how we feel about that. You know, is the NBA being safe? Is this a good idea? How happy we are, of course, to have sports back in our lives. And then also some of the particulars of what is going to happen when the games actually start getting played, make some gambling picks, and kind of talk about sports betting strategy for how to take advantage of the noise that's going to be inherent in these small sample size games. I hope that you guys enjoy it. Of course, if you like the show, please leave a rating and review on iTunes. That'll be super helpful. And if you really like the show, you can support it by subscribing on patreon.com/takecast to bonus episodes of the show. All right, everyone, bringing in Mike Gallagher from rotoworld.com, my buddy, Mike. It's been a while since we've been on the show because we haven't had basketball to talk about, but the tides are turning, the seas are changing. We are going to, in less than a month, we are going to have basketball back on our TVs.
I can't wait, man. I was so happy on Friday with the schedule release. I will shamefully admit I was tearing up because I was so happy. And my girlfriend walks in my office and she's like, "Are you crying?" I'm like, "Oh yeah."
I am, because basketball is the best.
Yeah, just like, oh, just opening up the NBA.com schedule and just seeing those games on there. I have one of my friends, and I don't know, you probably do the same. Like, just out of habit, you will just go on to the NBA schedule or the NFL schedule just like as a daily thing. So even in the off season, I would just always by accident, or if I meant to look at NFL games, I'll like accidentally click the NBA schedule. And it was just nice to click that and then actually see games on there. So I was in my feelings for sure. I can't wait, man. Got another month to go, but yeah, it's so exciting.
Yeah, it's the best, man. So we have, and I think the NBA is being as honest as they can about something that is happening, you know, if we're going to be real about it, the NBA is coming back because of money, not because it's the absolute safest thing to do in the world, which, you know, I guess I respect that Adam Silver is basically more or less willing to say that there are not a lot of great options. This is the option we're choosing. And we hope that it works out well. And it seems like for the most part, there are a couple players who are not playing. Wilson Chandler is not playing. And I know that you have a list of a couple other guys who are opting out. But it seems like, for the most part, everyone involved is pretty on board.
Yeah, Avery Bradley, Trevor Ariza, and Davis Bertans are the other big names that popped up over the last week.
Right.
There's a lot of fantasy implications there because he plays two positions and he plays in so many different lineup combos. We can get to that. But, so Silver had a conference call before the schedule release came out, and he had a few things that really stuck out to me. The number one, the headline, is that this thing's going to go on almost regardless. The quote he had that would lead to stopping it would be, quote, it would ultimately lead to us stopping if there was a significant spread. So what does significant spread mean? 50 people, 100 people, you know? I think it's going to be in that range than, you know, 20. I think closer to 50 than 25. Do you think that's – what would you define that as significant or bigger?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, so we're talking like, you know, give or take. Depends how many people they sign, you know, 300 players-ish. So 50 people, 16%, you know. So, that's what I got from that one. Masks are mandatory except when people aren't playing. And Silver, I've been talking about this on my podcast for a while. The whole Disney employees factor, they need to tighten that up, man. You know, and Silver had mentioned they're going to try to increase testing on them. And I've been saying, you know, pay them like hazard pay. Bring in a new crew every 3 weeks. Test them, obviously, before they go in. I just think that could potentially be an issue where, you know, these guys are interacting with them in the bubble and they're going in and out of the bubble. It's like not a bubble. So those things have to get fixed. And the other one is, if a superstar does test positive, so like LeBron, Kawhi, whoever else, they're going to get treated basically the same way. So that's another thing too. Like,
I mean, that is the big question. We're getting ready for the bubble NBA finals, and
you know, whoever it is that is responsible for cooking LeBron's dinner is COVID positive and gets LeBron COVID, and we're going to game five of the finals and LeBron tests positive for COVID.
Yeah.
What's the protocol?
Yeah, so they'll be out for pretty much 2 weeks being quarantined. They're going to go to a separate hotel pretty much, basically just take him away from the whole situation. And then there's a lot of jokes on Twitter right now that J.R. Smith signed with the Lakers. I mean, who name a player more likely than J.R. Smith to break the bubble? Right. So there's that. I mean, like LeBron is – I think LeBron will get everybody in line like, hey, man, like this is serious, you know, no funny business, you know, stay – Do what you're told, you know, keep everything in the bubble. Have fun. We've joked about, you know, amenities, maybe females to
come. I mean, yeah, these dudes are young millionaires. Are we to believe that for 3 months they're not going to want to have fun and go out and talk to girls?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Just seems like no way.
Yeah, look around the world right now in the country. You see all these lower 20 people just hanging out at the beach. Just like, I live in Arizona. People are still packed in the bars, just like doing their things. They're young and they want to have fun. And I get that. And so, yeah, like you said, the money factor too, but yeah, they really got to just buckle down. So it's going to be crazy how everyone like, the first guy, like there's going to be someone who tests positive in this, I feel like. So it's just a matter of like how many other people get affected by it. And then again, that's like, imagine like if I don't, how, like from a betting standpoint, do you like approach it differently if you're like, oh, LeBron could get it or Giannis?
Well, a betting standpoint, and this is because we've been talking about this for baseball, is you bet underdogs. Take advantage of the chaos sort of as much as would even be possible. And teams who are talented, but you know, like I think the Celtics and the Rockets are really good examples of, if something happens to LeBron, if something happens to Kawhi, if something happens to Giannis, these are the teams that are most likely to benefit. You know, I think that's pretty obvious.
I had the same takeaway. Yeah. You don't feel as great about the favorites with this whole thing going in. But, and then also I mentioned this on my pod last week too, like, and it tied into this. So, like, teams aren't going to be ready to go. You know, they're obviously not going to be in optimal position to win games or play whatever they want to do. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But, like, and I mentioned, do you possibly tank to play the Lakers earlier or, you know, the Clippers earlier? If that's, you know, you'd maybe rather play them before they're kind of humming and they have their chemistry back and all that. So is that, like, a viable strategy?
Well, I think what's interesting is – some of these teams that are here are going to be treating this like preseason, right? And some of these teams are immediately going to go into 8-man playoff rotation, like let's figure it out and get it done now. And I think that really early on, you know, over these first 2 weeks or whatever for DFS, figuring out which teams go to those tighter rotations and which teams are playing preseason rotations, it's going to be extremely important to figure that out. And it's going to be a huge edge to figure that out before other people get there.
Absolutely. Just a couple things I wanted to add on the schedule stuff. So it's like a DFS dream, man. 12:30 to 9, it ranges the start times. You know, we're talking, it's mostly six games. So there's 7 6-game slates, 3 7-game slates, 5 games are 3 days, 4 games are 2 days. They're basically at the last two of the last 3 days, and then just the 2-game opener. So, I mean, I've said for a long time since I've realized DFS is awesome. 6 and 7 games are like my favorite slates. So yeah, just like it's Christmas like every day. It's so awesome.
So there is this really interesting wrinkle, and I have not heard anyone bring this up yet, though, to be fair. I have not been, you know, grinding the basketball pods and stuff as hard as I do when the season is going full bore. But what do we think the injury reporting is going to be like from inside the bubble? Because I assume that beat writers are not in the bubble, right? Like, you know, like they're not, right? Or are
they? I've actually been talking to a lot of people who cover teams, hashtag sources, and they don't want to go. So, like,
why would you want to?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I talked to people who don't even have families. They still don't want to go. You know, it's just like no one wants to go. So it's going to be so undercovered. Whereas, I mean, my Twitter list I use has like 250 people. that are like newsbreakers. Like it's going to be, I mean, that's the whole thing I'm just waiting on right now is like, how are their coach conferences? Cause like the Hornets, a couple teams do the pressers and they'll basically live stream it. So I think that has to be a thing where like every team is live streaming press conferences. And is it just going to be one reporter per team? Are there even going to be, is it even going to be that much? Is there going to be like two or three kind of bubble wide? Like the big companies, like the Athletic, who have, you know, multiple Lakers, they have a ton of people covering that team. Like they're going to have fewer guys. You know, all the AP guys and all those guys are going to be way down. So, like, besides that, we have, and I mentioned this too last week, like the NBA injury report, the official one, comes out at 1:30, 5:30, and 8:30. With games starting at 12:30, obviously, you're going to have to move that up. Are they going to be more frequent? Are they going to have fewer? Are they going to have, you know, bigger notice on when you're going to DMP rest guys? Is that going to have to be spelled out? Like, oh, hey, we're planning to rest Kawhi in 8 days, or, you know, like they're going to rest them. Each team gets a back-to-back, by the way. So some people are going to sit out there. So is that part of it? Are they going to be more open on outlining guys that are going to sit? And like, I hope they don't just go probable tag festivals. And like, I don't know. There's just so many unknowns on how this is going to be covered. But the big takeaway right now is like the amount of information, or the sources of information, are going to be way down. So that's something we have to think about too.
So I wonder if the NBA, because, you know, they are trying to be this fantasy forward, this betting forward league, I'm wondering if one of the things they negotiate with the teams is you got to have your injury reports out at noon the day of your games, or an hour before your games. Yeah.
Earlier. Yeah. So I was kind of thinking when would be the optimal times that they wanted to go, you know, three a day, which I think they're going to probably have to drop to two. Just because it's more spread out, basically, like, you know, beginning of the day and then middle of the day. I guess they could still do three. But I think that first report has to come out at, like, 8 in the morning, maybe even earlier, and then a nighttime one too. So people who are on the West Coast or whatever, you know, they kind of can have stuff figured out. But, yeah, that's going to be huge. And as I've said before, if we're not getting as many reports from the reporters, that injury report is going to carry more value. Because things aren't going to be reported as much. Whereas, like, you see the injury report, and more than half the time, we already knew it to begin with. So, yeah, this whole, like, figuring out an edge on that aspect, like, are, you know, beat writers who aren't there going to say, hey, I've heard this about this guy not playing? Is that how it's going to be? So we're going to have to be more adept at reading, and I read pretty much everything anyways, but, like, is, like, reading the stuff behind the paywall, is that more valuable now? Like, there's so many things that are going to be different as how we use news and how it makes our lineups better.
Do you think that, like, is Shams going, is Woj going, or either of those dudes trying to bubble up? Because
so.
Those,
yeah.
I mean, whoever, if there is a beat reporter, you know, if the Athletic sends someone, NBA.com sends one, like, those dudes might end up being the reporters for every team,
right.
You know, covering the beat. If there's five reporters who go in, and I hope they get paid.
Yeah, for sure.
I hope they are compensated fairly.
Yeah,
for
I actually had considered. I mean, I'm obviously scared of. I'm a freak out about it, but I think for the experience, I think it would be worth it almost. But yeah, it's gonna be crazy how that comes out. But I would bet, and like. Do teams themselves, because teams have all those social media people, are they basically going to get more responsibilities now? I know people who work for NBA teams as social, they don't really want to go either. So it's just insane. No one wants to go to this thing, which, I mean, obviously makes sense. But
I mean, I wouldn't go.
Yeah.
If I was some, you know, minor associate of a team, no way would I go.
Right? Yeah, no, but no I mean, chance. It would be, they'd have to pay you a lot more, you know? But I don't know if they're – I mean, did they just try to cut that out? Like, if there's – if they're like, say what? Maybe if the reporters are, like, what, 10 of them? Are they going to be able to, you know, provide enough info for 22 teams? I don't know. That's just – that's really the next big question that we have to get with the schedule too. But, yeah, I'm very curious to see how it comes out. It's just, there's so many different things I have to address on this whole situation. Like, late scratches, man. Like, what happens? Like, do you get penalized for that? Like, I don't, like, and then also too, like, does DK make late swapping like the standard now? Because games are going to be, you know, 7-8 hours
FanDuel,
away.
FanDuel won't bring it back. They won't. So maybe I think that the games on DK are just going to be like better. Like FanDuel will just not have contests as big.
Yeah. And do you, like, is that another advantage too? Because do you play earlier games because you feel more comfortable with avoiding late scratches rather than a game that's, you know, slate starting, it's 7 hours away, like things can happen. Does that, that probably is also another lineup factor you have to think about, especially in like a cash.
Yeah, for sure. There's going to be, and we'll get a better sense of it after a couple days, but the first couple days of it really is going to be kind of like the Wild West. So getting into some of these actual games, who wins out, the Pelicans or the Grizzlies?
So I think there's going to be a play-in game. I think the Pelicans are – I'm Mr. Pelicans. They're just out. They smoked the Grizzlies in two games. Jaren Jackson didn't play in one. Zion also didn't play in one either. Drew beat the brakes off John Morant in those two games. So if they come to that, they play each other one time too. But the Pelicans are playing pretty well. And believe it or not, one of the best lineups in the NBA is Drew, Lonzo, Ingram, Zion, and Favors at +26.3 net rating in 230 minutes. That's why I stumbled my numbers. But that's the second best lineup in the NBA of the 91 lineups with 100 minutes. The number one is the Schroeder OKC lineup. So they're playing really well. Lonzo was on fire. Before we hit the pause button, he was 21-8-8, 2.2 steals on 69 true shooting, 21 usage rate. So, I mean, the Pelicans were really starting to play well. Zion was kind of rounding into form. Even Favors was kind of starting to get healthy, playing well, protecting the paint a little bit better. Brandon Ingram still was playing pretty well. So, I mean, the Pelicans, they won't beat the Lakers, but I think they won't get swept. I think I've always, again, maybe a little bit biased because I love the Pelicans so much. But, we have the Grizzlies on the flip side of that, too. They're going to be better. You know, they'll have Brandon Clark back. They'll have Jaren Jackson back. Justice Winslow should be out there, possibly starting. I don't think they would want to pull DeAnthony Melton out of the first unit, but maybe that's an option. And then they also have, do they take Kyle Anderson out of the rotation to play Justice Winslow? So the whole, like, Justice Winslow factor is intriguing to me, especially with John Morant, who was playing a little bit better, too, later in the year, too, as well. So, I think the Pelicans are going to – and they also – the NBA, of course, there's been rumors that they're basically expanding this because they want the Pelicans in here. Jacob Goldstein from I forget what site he writes for, Wins Added, I believe. He has the Pelicans with the easiest remaining schedule based on strength of schedule, which is not surprising. It's pretty funny that the NBA wants the Pelicans in there. And so do I. I mean, the Pelicans are such a fun brand of basketball.
I mean, that's just good branding, right? It's good branding to have the Pelicans on the TV for an extra 2 weeks. You know, they have Zion, they have Lonzo, they have Brandon Ingram, like a lot of guys with high Q scores already on that team, basically.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, good basketball. And those two teams play each other on August 3rd, which will pretty much be, that'll be like the best game of quarantine.
Yeah, that'll be one of the best ones. There are going to be so many good ones, though. Like, I'm fascinated by all the bad teams. And even Woj just alluded to this, that they're, you know, some teams are treating it like a summer league where they're going to play guys who need minutes and so on. Like, the Wizards are for sure in that mix. And, like, did they add that play-in game just for the Wizards? You know, it made, because everyone kind of thought, like, why are the Wizards basically even in there, which they don't really have much of a chance. But yeah, that's the Wizards are going to be all. I mean, they're one of the best DFS plays. Also, they play terrible defense and fast too. So I'm upset, like, what do the Suns do? How much Mikal Bridges are going to get? There's no Kelly Oubre. There's like so many things that we have to research going into this. And again, like, there's a whole new layer to it with just teams' mentality going into games. You know, like, are they, like you said, is it going to be playoff rotation? Is it going to be, you know, mixing and matching, 12-man rotations, nightmare status, all the stuff you have to figure out.
What is your guess on some of the teams that are likely to go immediately into playoff rotations?
In regard, in what aspects are you?
In like, so in the 8-game regular season that we have left, you know, basically starting from opening night, we have Clips versus Lakers on the opening night. Like, do we think the Bucks, the Clips, the Lakers, the Rockets, the Celtics, do we think they're all pretty much immediately going, you know, 8-9-man playoff rotation? Or do you think that they're still going to be playing, you know, or do we think that at the beginning, those teams are still going to be using those first couple regular season games, like tune-up games?
So I think it depends. I think obviously the Lakers, they probably have the biggest question mark with Avery Bradley, who we troll all the time because he's not productive on the stat sheet, but he made a good impact for that team. And he was playing really well. He was pretty healthy too. He played his last 39 games with the Lakers. So taking him out of the equation is very interesting. Do you explore more of the Kuzma AD front court? Do you put Caruso in there?
Yeah, I think Caruso, right? Caruso's the guy who played, or Quinn Cook too, I guess.
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but J.R. Smith too. But my takeaway from the Bradley thing was Caruso and Kuzma, because the Kuzma lineup without Avery Bradley with AD and LeBron is fantastic. It's like +26 net rating. Statistically, he's garbage. As most people know, DFS, when LeBron and AD are playing, Kuzma's terrible. But, that's something they have to figure out. Like, is it going to be a matchup thing? Like, because if they play the Pelicans in the first round, I mean, do you just play AD at the five and go that route? Because they're going to throw so many things at you with spreading the floor. So that's something you have to think about as well. But like, teams that I think – and even the Clippers still, like, the whole Marcus Morris factor, like, do they figure out where he's going to be in the rotation? That lineup was actually playing great, by the way. Pat Beverly, PG, Kawhi, Morris, and Zubats, when he started, that was one of the best lineups in the NBA as well. So, like, do you do that? Do you just start Harrell? Because they've kind of liked Harrell off the bench, but they're going to extend his minutes a little bit. What about Joakim Noah now? So, I think they're going to probably try to him out some spots. So, like, teams that kind of knew where they were, like the Bucks, I think. You know, I think they'll probably go into it thinking, like, okay, just make sure everyone's in shape, make sure everyone's got their shot back, basically just, like, practice. But these teams that have question marks, if somebody else obviously, you know, opts out, that would change things. So fluid rotations, uncertain aspects of rotations may have teams approach it differently. You would think that just makes sense from a logical standpoint.
I think one team that we are lock going to see their playoff rotation from is going to be the Houston Rockets, because this is actually true. Over quarantine, they got rid of their last center on the roster, Mike. Isaiah Hartenstein was waived over the last couple months, which means they do not have one player on their roster classified as a center.
Tyson Chandler.
Oh, is he actually on the roster?
Yeah, he's not going to really play. But, yeah, it's a total, yep, we're good. Bye-bye, center. We don't need you anymore. Which is interesting because they actually play pretty well with that lineup. And specifically, I did a little deep dive on Russell Westbrook a couple months ago. God, it's been a long time. They've been Russ without a center is fantastic. He has like elite efficiency. You know, he turns the ball over a lot, but shooting efficiency is way up. And they've really loved that Tucker Roko front court. And since they acquired Roko, that lineup has been the most used lineup in the NBA, the Harden, Westbrook, House, Roko, Tucker lineup, 164 minutes since they acquired him. It's the most in the league. So, yeah, Harden shoots like garbage, but he's high usage, 34 usage rate, even with Westbrook in this time. Westbrook per 36 is 29-9-6. Don't forget, his minutes may go up a little bit too. So, Harden, Westbrook, man, I mean, I just think they're going to be just monsters every night. It'll be interesting to see who they play in the playoffs, but you know, they also play fast. The Tucker lineup with Wes and Harden, 111 pace. It's also +8 net rating. So, yeah, Roko was playing great. You know, before we talked about this a long time ago in one of the last pods we did, how much we were liking the Roko factor. So, yeah, I think the Rockets could certainly make some noise. James Harden's in shape. You know, Westbrook's going to be in shape. Just the way they play. Even Mike D'Antoni said they want to play fast. And I think that's what they're going into it, thinking like, hey, you know, let's get in better shape than everybody else. Let's make sure we're ready to go and run people out of the gym as fast as we can. So the Rockets are going to be such an attractive DFS play, both in the seeding games and whoever they play in the first round. And I think they'll probably advance. I think the Rockets are going to be pretty good.
Well, it's also massive for them, because they have to hold on to their current seeding, or they will have to play the Clippers early. They would have to play the Clippers in the semifinals if they were not able to hold on to their current seeding. So I think we'll see pretty much that, you know, that super used lineup. I think we'll see 38 minutes, 40 minutes a night of Russell Westbrook and James Harden and Rocco. Like, I just think they're – and the conditioning thing also is massive for them, right, because of that style they play.
And, I mean, like I said, I don't really feel that – because we used to always think that you want to play the best teams later in this in the playoffs. Like, if you know you're going into this series or the postseason in your best shape and the other team maybe not, I mean, do you want to play them earlier? Like, I know I mentioned this earlier. Like, I think that's – like, if it's like, I think the Rockets are going in knowing that. So, I don't think playing the Clippers first is necessarily a bad thing. And then even after, you know, they've had so much heartbreak – it's almost better to get the heartbreak earlier. I can't wait for this to start.
So, like, very specifically in the case of the Clippers, I think you could argue you actually would not want to play them early because you want to give Kawhi Leonard's knee time to get banged up, right? Because right now Kawhi should be feeling great. All he's been doing is working out, you know, doing yoga and figuring out, you know, Kawhi and Paul George, they feel as good right now as they're going to feel.
Yeah, but, I mean, all that time off and not having your normal routine, does that affect soft tissue? Like, Jared Dudley and Pat Beverly kind of went at it on Twitter last week. So, like, not being in normal routine, are your muscles in the peak shape that they should be? Are you more likely to mess them up, pull a muscle? This stuff we kind of don't even know. So, I don't know. I think that's kind of almost a wash, whereas, like, you know, you're getting possibly a rusty Kawhi versus a possible injured Kawhi down the line. But Kawhi's definitely one of the guys you would think of first. But and the Clippers too, they were playing awesome before. So I looked up some. I was trying to figure out like who was hot, who was cold, and then going into the season as well. So when the season started, remember the Pelicans were a disaster. They were 1-7. Everyone was, you know, digging their grave for them. The Magic, Kings, and Wizards were 2-6. The Thunder were 3-5. The Lakers and Celtics were 7-1, and the Raptors and Nuggets were 6-2. That was the start of the season. So of the last eight games, before we hit the pause button, Clippers were 7-1. Pacers, Lakers, and Thunder were 6-2, and then some bad teams were the Spurs, Blazers, and Suns were 3-5. Not everybody else was in between. So, like, did the Clippers just pick up where they left off? Because they kind of had the rotation set. They never really – most of the season with Paul George being banged up, you know, come the shoulder injuries earlier, then the hamstring that pulled three times. That's a factor. So, again, like, all that time off, our PG's hamstring's in good shape. So all this stuff we have to kind of figure out. It's like it's kind of a mess from a betting standpoint.
It's definitely a mess from a betting standpoint. Like, and this is everything you have to consider looking at these futures markets, which, and you know what, kind of thinking about it, the Bucks don't really have these same concerns. You know, their rotation is mostly young guys. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, Brooke is older at center, but he probably has not minded having some time off. But, you know, Giannis is peak physicality. Chris Middleton, peak physicality. Like, these guys are literally in the best shape of their lives. You know, they're right at that prime athletic age. So, you know, maybe the Bucks should be more of a favorite considering the concerns that we could have about the Clippers' health with Paul George's shoulders and Kawhi Leonard's knees, and then the Lakers just with, you know, LeBron. LeBron has his body down to such a routine every year of, you know, getting ready to play those playoff games and everything, and now he is all out of sorts, right? Like, whatever LeBron has done to get ready for the playoffs every year for the last 10 years or whatever, that's all out the window now.
And then to add to your Bucks point, so one other thing I like about the Bucks that I think will help translate better with all this time off is they are fantastic at rim protection. So our teams, you know, we're not shooting the ball as well. Let's get in the paint a little bit more.
Let's go get to the rim, yeah.
Yeah, so you don't really want to do that against the – I mean, you do, but you're not going to have as much success. So does that help them? I think if I had to pick somebody to win, which we'll talk about, like, I think the Bucks are also kind of a low-key favorite just because things are so much kind of clearer. Where, like, the Avery Bradley factor, we mentioned these injuries with the Clippers. But the Clippers, I think, are probably, on paper, you know, probably the best team, I feel like, to win it.
They're the deepest team.
Yeah, because sure. They're depth. Yeah, exactly. They have so many things that they could just put, again, adding Morris and Pat Beverly being back. Shamet has been pretty decent if they need a guy to pinch there. So they just, they're deep everywhere they need to be. Whereas, like, hypothetically, so say, you know, Kawhi and LeBron, they play each other opening night and they get COVID-19, so they possibly miss the first round. Like, you for sure feel more comfortable the Clippers are going to advance versus, like, losing LeBron, as good as AD is. Like, that's the coldest take in the world, right?
That is such a good point. There are some of these teams, like the Rockets, if James Harden gets James Harden has to go isolate for 2 weeks, and then he tests and he comes out, and yeah, he's fine. Like, they're probably already done by James Harden missing 2 weeks worth of games, whereas the Clippers, I would say, even without one of Kawhi or Paul George, they would still be favored in their first round series in that 2-7 matchup.
Yeah, and from a statistical standpoint, Paul George without Kawhi on the floor is a monster. He's, you know, if you look at his per 36 without Kawhi, he's extraordinarily great, whereas with Kawhi, he's not as good, which was kind of the reverse. With Westbrook last year, when the season, when he was with the Thunder, he shot significantly better with Westbrook. So that's something to think about too. But yeah, there's just so many unknowns. Like, we feel like we know so much about, you know, especially for people who, like me or whoever lives DFS and, like, it's like their life. Like, we feel like we have an idea on things and we don't.
Yeah.
So it's such foreign territory.
Yeah. I mean, I think finding insights in terms of playing time or just overall having some sort of process day to day for DFS is obviously going to be huge, and just embracing the variance that's going to come with all of this, right? And knowing and accepting that stuff is just going to be weird is going to be a big part of it.
And to that point, as, like, DFS players or people in the business, when's the right time to go to sleep? Like, if you want to get your 8-7 hours in, do you try to go sleep as fast as you can when the games are over so you can wake up and start grinding?
Depends on why you do it, right? Some people really like to grind and they don't care as much what they're grinding, and some people want to watch everything, right?
Right.
I think another huge thing is just going to be people are going to be playing NBA Showdown a ton because the contests for Showdown are going to be massive. It's going to be a lot easier to play those contests than track, you know, 6, 5, whatever, 4 games all day long and figure out your late swaps and get on your computer and rerun your lineups and everything. Like, it's just going to be one of those things where it's like Showdown is just going to become hugely popular on DraftKings.
From a guy who sleeps and breathes news, I like those longer slates. Like, I feel like I have a little bit of an advantage because I'm reading everything and I know as much as I can, whereas people are like, oh yeah, he's probably going to do this. You know, I feel like that's so, like, again, I think that just, like, you know, information and getting information is going to be heavily rewarded throughout this whole thing.
Yeah, grinding information and being willing to, you know, be sitting at your computer and rerunning stuff, you know, right before lineups lock, like that's going to be the edge in this stuff for sure. It's just going to be people who are outworking everyone else in DFS are going to be massive. Like the rewards there are going to be massive.
Sure.
Who do we think got the biggest boost from the time off? I kind of think the answer is the Rockets, just because Harden and Westbrook got to take a breather, but the answer could also be, like, the 76ers, could be the Celtics, you know, Kemba getting all the way healthy and everything. So there are a couple answers here, I think.
Yeah, I think it has to be Philly, just because the Ben Simmons thing. You know, he was hurt. He should be back. Should be good. We don't know how this backage issue is going to affect him, but I think that's going to help. Maybe you could say the Pacers with Malcolm Brogdon, but I don't really buy the Pacers at all. But we've said all along the Sixers are potentially the guys that could make a deep run despite having a rough, you know, they match up against the Bucks better than really anybody else easily. So yeah, I think it's clearly them. I'm trying to think who would be. Yeah, it's pretty much them.
I mean, I think the return of, you know, Kemba's had 3 months now to rest that knee. I think that's pretty big. I mean, I guess you could argue that maybe the Celtics' best lineup doesn't even have Kemba in it, which is you know, interesting. So maybe not in that aspect, but having healthy Kemba does seem like a good
thing. Yeah, Kemba's good. And then also Jason Tatum, you know, March Eastern Conference Player of the Month. He was playing absurdly good before we hit the pause button too. He was doing, and even I looked into that too. I did a Jason Tatum deep dive, but he's still pretty productive with Kemba. Jaylen Brown also significantly better shooting splits with Kemba. So Jaylen Brown's kind of breakout. My president Jaylen Brown, his breakout somewhat attributed to Kemba Walker, and then also just quick on Jaylen, he wasn't covering on ball as much, so that emphasis has shifted more to offense. So that helped him kind of take a step forward on the stat sheet as well. So Daniel Theis was playing great. Robert Williams is also working out too. So they have depth there. The Celtics are interesting to me. Like we've always said, they're kind of like a lower ceiling, higher floor team. So do you think they could get hot? Again, they started the season red hot too. So can they, you know, get going right away? Do they play Boston? I mean, they don't want to play the Sixers in the first round. So, you know, can they maybe? I don't think they're going to be able to catch Toronto for three games.
Yeah, I don't think they can either. Something very bad would have to happen.
Yeah, the Toronto, too, they're getting their big man depth back with Serge and Gasol. So that helps them as well. So, I don't really think. Yeah, they're also. I mean, Toronto's fascinating to me, man, because we kind of always assumed they were going to get, you know, probably out of the first round and then they're done. Right, like that's kind of what we had assumed. Like, is Miami was playing pretty well before too. So, yeah, the East is kind of besides the Bucks, everything is kind of just a mess.
Yeah, everything is kind of a mess. Well, everything's just kind of very up in the air in the Eastern Conference, and so I think the Celtics can win. I think the Celtics can beat the Bucks in a weird way. They also have playoff experience despite being a really young team. I think being a really young team is an advantage during all of this with everyone of having time off. What if the reverse argument is you actually want a team full of a bunch of old vets who like aren't feeling the need to, go out at night doing risky behaviors. Like they're like way less likely to get COVID because they're just, you know, up in their room watching Netflix when they're not at practice.
Yeah, that's a good point too. It's kind of, again, there's just so many layers to this.
So many layers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like leadership too. Like these guys who, like LeBron, we said earlier, you know, they have to be all on the same page and, you know, one person breaking it could ruin it for everybody. So that's something to think of too. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how, if we had to pick, like, and also side note, the Bucks are obviously rooting for the Pacers because, I mean, if the Sixers land in that sixth spot, that's jackpot if you want to play.
Well, yeah, I mean, should the 76ers tank out to get to six so that they can avoid the Bucks until the Eastern Conference Finals? Like, yeah, I think that seems like yes.
Yeah, I think so too. Like I said earlier, you want to play tougher teams earlier maybe, but in this instance, like for sure. And then also, yeah, you don't – the Bucks also, they don't really have anything to say, but – I don't really see – I mean, obviously, again, who would be like the second threat to the Bucks, besides, I mean, would it be the Raptors or the Celtics? I guess it would be the Heat.
To me, we haven't even mentioned the Heat yet, but to me, it's the Celtics. I mean, I think the Celtics are so good. If the Celtics are very, very good, and if Jason Tatum has, you know, continues to take this leap, they are amazing.
Yeah, but I'll add on the Kemba stuff. When he was sitting out, six of the last 10 games, I believe it was. It was wear and tear, man. And this guy's had multiple surgeries on his knee. So all this time off, I just don't feel entirely – I love Kemba, but I don't feel entirely comfortable with him all this time off. So I might say they're a little bit of a loser. Obviously, they have depth, Smart, and everybody – they can kind of switch around with their kind of core six-ish guys, excluding the center. So that's something I'm a little bit nervous about.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's appropriate to be – nervous about Kemba's knee. I think it's appropriate to be. Do we think that Joel Embiid's health is going to be like a non-issue? You know, do you think he'll be able to be pretty much ready to play full minutes because he just got all this time off to rest?
I think so. I mean, he's talked about how rest helps him, so he's going to probably be limited in his eight games, assuming he's in shape. Which, I mean, there's nothing to think that he wouldn't be. But yeah, I think he's probably maybe a mild winner because he's a He has injuries. You know, he doesn't have these wear and tear things like Kemba does.
Right.
So, him and Kawhi are kind of similar in that elk. But, I think that Embiid's a little bit of a winner, too. And just a quick side note, don't forget, a player that really broke out while Ben Simmons was down was Shake Milton.
Yeah.
So how does he fit into this? Do you dial back Al Horford a little bit and give Shake some more time? There really isn't a lot of time of Shake and Ben Simmons and Embiid and Tobias. It's like, I think, 90 minutes or something. And that lineup was trash. I forget what the net rating was, but it was really bad. So, that's a factor, too. So, the whole, Ben Simmons coming back, and they realize that, okay, Shake Milton is more valuable than Matisse Thybulle and freaking Korkmaz and all that. So, I think figuring that out and how they can use that information will be hugely helpful for them. Because Shake's such a baller.
Yeah. Yeah, Shake is a baller. I like Thybulle. Maybe Thybulle has just been in the gym working on his jump shot, you know, doing nothing but shooting jumpers for the last 2 months.
He's on TikTok now too, so he's hopefully the TikTok hasn't messed up his hoops game.
Oh, TikTok, man, it's not good. literally, if you have TikTok on your phone, go delete it right now. It only exists to harvest your data.
I wouldn't have TikTok, but weren't they somewhat responsible for the messing up the Tulsa stuff?
Yes, they were. A bunch of kids fake registered for
shouts to any K-pop fans.
Yeah, shouts to the K-pop fans. All right, very, very important question. Who wins, Mike? Who wins the 2020 non-asterisk NBA championship?
Nice. I still think it's the Clippers, man. I've said it. Drew and I have said it all the way from the jump. They're playing great. I believe in them. Losing Avery Bradley is something to me. I think they have what it takes to beat the Bucks if they get to the finals. They're just the depth is huge for them. So I'm gonna take Clippers. Bucks, and let's go seven. Let's get a October 13th game seven, which will give us a 1 week off season.
All right, I'm gonna go a different direction. I'm gonna get weird. I'm gonna go Lakers Celtics. Assuming at some point one big player who's absolutely necessary to their team success is gonna have to miss 2 weeks with a positive test. I don't know who it is. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm not naming names, but so at some point, an important player is going to test positive. It's just going to be ready for it now because it's going to happen.
We need the Sports Almanac to find out in the future who this player is going to be for sure.
Yep. All right, Mike, what do you guys have going on over at Roto World right now?
Not much, man. Just chilling, watching news and figuring out what we're going to do. And yeah, I can't wait. I want to start tomorrow. This next month is going to be very, 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 very long. But I'm pretty much just spending time being as prepared as I can for, you know, going down the flow chart and figuring out what happens when guys sit. So just having that in your mental capacity and just being really on the fly with it is going to be super, super valuable. I mean, there's so many things I kind of forgot. So just being back to being in game shape as a someone who covers basketball is something I'm trying to work on.
Yeah, you got to get ready to get those reps in, dude. Get those reps in. Get the blurbing fingers ready.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, everyone, thank you very much for listening. Get ready, get hyped for the NBA playoffs. Follow Mike on Twitter. Read all his work over on Roto World, and we will chat with you guys soon.